Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. My name is John Peters, and I'm joined here by Kyle McKelvey. This week, we're talking Round Rock Classic, Big West baseball, and we answer a question from our mailbag about the SEC. Let's talk college baseball. Kyle, we're 3 weeks away from the start of the college baseball season. How's it going?
Doing well. How about you?
Doing pretty good. With each day that passes, I get a little bit more excited. I think it feels more and more real. For so long, I've been in off-season mode. I just don't think I've been allowing myself to get hyped about the season as much, but it's coming. It's getting there.
It's almost here. I just took an exam a few weeks ago, and so I'm fully into ready for season mode, already watching highlights of previous years and just getting hyped.
Going down that YouTube rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so a little bit of a less busy week in terms of news in the college baseball world, but let's go over some of the highlights. One of the big things we learned was that Vanderbilt is going to be taking a trip to Oklahoma State for a nice non-conference weekend. It's not unreasonable to think that both of those teams might be in the top 25 when that series happens. It's going to be in the shiny brand new Obrate Stadium that Oklahoma State has built. So that's something that's pretty exciting, something to be looking forward to. Elsewhere, the Shriners College Classic, we learned last week that Texas A&M was pulling out of that and was scheduling a home weekend series against New Mexico State instead. They have been replaced by another school in their system, Texas A&M Corpus Christi. So the Islanders will be heading up to Houston to take on the rest of the Shriners College Classic teams. And then another thing that we saw happening this last week, so we've seen a few other rankings be released from some of the other publications, and it's not something that happens super common, but we have, as of right now, a unanimous number one team with Florida. It's not common in college baseball to have such a clear favorite heading into the season, but so far all of the media agrees that Florida is the best team heading into next year. We're still waiting on the coaches' poll, but I would be pretty surprised if they don't also agree with that assessment. One thing though, if you look at all the polls, the five polls that have been released, there's around 40 teams or so that have snuck into the top 25. So Kyle, can you give us any insight into why you think that certain polls have some of these Big Ten teams in, or have some teams that maybe that we weren't as excited about for our top 25 or maybe even our top 50?
Yeah, it looks like at the back of a lot of these rankings that a lot of these publications just picked a bunch of teams and threw them up in the air and see where they landed. And so that's kind of where we got to where we are. But some of these groups seem to rely more on upside, like collegiate baseball might not look back at like previous history or experience or something, while others look like Michigan, or like Perfect Game, like has Michigan ranked, I believe, at 18th, partially based on like recruiting from their recruiting efforts, partially based on probably. But
sometimes you just place a bet on a head coach, right? Eric Back, you probably think that if anyone's going to recruit the Midwest well and be able to develop a team, it's going to be someone like him.
Yeah, that's true. And also Michigan like still has some players from that Omaha run they had a couple years ago. So maybe a lot of these places will go based on experience coming back. Some people will also don't like how teams ended 2020 season, even though it was COVID shortened. Like there's one that has Arkansas at 14th. No, actually, collegiate baseball has them at 22nd. We have them in our top 10 because we really like the talent they're bringing in and bringing back from last year. So there's a wide variety of perspectives, I guess.
Yeah, long answer short, I think, is everyone always takes media opinion with a grain of salt. I think 2021, that grain of salt should be a little bit bigger. There's a lot of efforts into trying to place bets in terms of talent returning, productivity, talent being brought in. But at the end of the day, it matters. All that matters is the games. And we're just a couple of weeks away from the games, and we're going to start seeing these teams on the field instead of on paper. Another thing that we haven't touched on yet that's happening early on in the 2021 college baseball season that I think is pretty exciting. It's kind of going under the radar, but it's a pretty unique thing. LSU is hosting a round robin tournament to start the year off. We currently have LSU at number 13 in our preseason top 50. We think that led by Jaden Hill, they should have a nice rotation and should be able to compete in the SEC. They're bringing into town Air Force, Notre Dame, and Louisiana Tech. Louisiana Tech is joining this tournament. They originally had Illinois scheduled to come into town, but with the cancellation of Big Ten non-conference play, they were looking for something else, and they stumbled into this, which I think is a pretty cool opportunity for them. So I think it's safe to say that LSU should be the clear favorite to win 2-3 games in this round robin. But Kyle, who in your opinion is someone who might sneak out of there with a couple wins and all of a sudden look pretty impressive?
I think it's a toss-up between Notre Dame and Louisiana Tech. Notre Dame included in their 2020 season a road sweep at North Carolina. So that's like a super impressive win for Notre Dame, who not a lot of people expected to do well. You generally don't expect, it's harder to expect Midwest teams to do well, but I mean, Notre Dame is doing really well, has done really well.
Under new head coach Link Jarrett there, so he might have something to do with that success.
Yeah, that's very true. And Louisiana Tech, they've always been a wily team. I know a few years ago I was at Frisco Classic and they took a game at a highly ranked A&M team, and they're playing tough. Like they've always just played well. They have a chance to make a name for themselves in this tournament. Playing LSU, they could steal one from LSU and ruin the home team's dreams there.
And that trip's a lot shorter from Ruston to Baton Rouge than it is from South Bend or the Air Force Academy. So that might play a factor as well. But I agree. I think Notre Dame is probably the second best team in that tournament. It's a team that we thought about ranking in our top 50, didn't quite make the cut just because the SEC is pretty deep and someone's got to end up at the bottom. And as of now, it's looking like Notre Dame might be one of those teams, but you know, win 2 or 3 games in this tournament and that would put them going in the right direction. So the second weekend of the college baseball season, we have the Round Rock Classic. And it's also maybe not getting quite as much attention as, for instance, the College Baseball Showdown, which is happening up at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas, and for good reason. So the College Baseball Showdown has the 3 best teams from the SEC West and 3 best teams from the Big 12, has some of those big marquee matchups. But the Round Rock Classic is really intriguing in its own right. So we're going to see Oklahoma and Baylor from the Big 12 go up against Auburn and Texas A&M from the SEC. And all those teams are also going to end up with 1 non-conference game against a conference foe. So they're doing a round robin style there. And as of right now, all these teams are just outside the top 25 for us, but they're also all inside the top 50. So they're all in that 30 to 50 range or so. And any one of these teams could easily move up and turn into a team that's competing for a regional host. But at the same time, any one or multiple of these teams might end up with a few too many losses and be one of those first few teams out of the NCAA tournament. So Kyle, who do you think has the most to gain from winning a couple games at the Round Rock Classic?
I think it's Auburn and A&M between those two teams, between those 4 teams. The SEC is just a grinder. And so you need to win these non-conference games when you can, because if you end up going 0-3 in this early tournament, it could spell disaster for winning series. It would look a lot harder to win these SEC series going forward. I know a lot of A&M fans kind of thought that same way last year when they started off offensively very, very hot, and they lost the three games at the Frisco Classic. They could do the same thing for A&M or Auburn here, and they're going to need to start off their year in their against the first Power Five teams that each team has off the right foot.
Yeah, and I think it's really easy to come up with a narrative around why each of these teams might be really good or why each of these teams might stumble. And that's kind of why we ended up not having them in the top 25, but still thinking they're pretty good. I'm going to go with Baylor. I think Baylor has the most to prove in this tournament. So they lose their shortstop from last year, Nick Lofton. That's a big loss, but we expect Baylor to be pretty consistent under Steve Rodriguez. He's done a good job there. But the thing that I'm worried about in the Big 12 is that the most teams Big 12 has ever gotten into the postseason to a regional is 7. And I think this is the deepest the Big 12 has ever been. That's something that we've said about a lot of conferences. It's true about the Big 12 as well. But if you're finishing 7th, 8th, 9th in the Big 12 regular season standings, you're going to need something on your resume that justifies why you being a couple games below 500 deserve to make it to a regional. And I think something like a win or two against OU or A&M could be that type of thing where if Baylor ends up finishing 7th, let's say in the Big 12, which I don't think is a really unreasonable place for them to finish, they could have a nice enough resume, a good enough RPI to allow them into a regional as a 3 seed. Obviously, though, if any team shows really poorly here, it's not going to bode the best in terms of conference play, but it's still going to be early in the season. Guys are probably going to have pitch limits. Who knows exactly what's going to be happening in terms of travel squads, COVID protocols, things like that. So, of course, we're not going to put too much weight into these tournaments, but it did, I would say, early season tournament really changed our perspective of Baylor last year. They went to Shriners and won 3 games. That was after they struggled some in their non-conference earlier in the year. It wasn't quite clear how good they were, but I think I finished 2020 thinking Baylor was probably a regional team after they beat Arkansas and LSU.
Yeah, very true. And they had expectations that they could finish second or third in the Big 12 last year, right behind Texas Tech.
Yeah, I think the Big 12 was a little bit more open last year. I think Texas Tech was the heavy favorite. I think this year it's going to be a little harder. I think there is clear tier 2-3 tier, which I think is TCU and Texas. I think maybe there's a good fight for 4th place, where I think Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Baylor are likely, maybe Kansas State are likely that 4 through 8. And I don't think that the 8th team is going to be a lot worse than the 4th team in the Big 12 next year. I kind of think there's a couple tiers in the Big 12. With Kansas on the outside looking in a little bit.
Yeah, I think Baylor are solidly in that tier behind TCU and Texas. And it's kind of same with Auburn and A&M. They're kind of right outside in the SEC West, at least. They're like just below that team. So this is going to be a good series for all these teams to make a name for themselves going forward.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating matchup of teams, I think. All 4 of these teams, like you're saying, I mean, it wouldn't be surprising to see Baylor at 4th in the Big 12 or OU at 4th in the Big 12. And, you know, coming into the season, they might be in the conversation for a regional host. But because the Big 12 is so deep, because the SEC West is so deep, it wouldn't be crazy to see Auburn finish last in the SEC West and still be on the bubble. And maybe this tournament is going to be something that's really important for them. Or likewise A&M. I think A&M, Auburn, Alabama are probably the 3 worst teams in the SEC West, and we think all 3 of those are still pretty solid teams. Next up on the slate is something that's near and dear to my heart. I'm a big fan of Big West baseball. It's consistently one of the top 7 or 8 conferences in terms of RPI. And between 2013 and 2017, they were consistently a multi-bid league. They had 2 to 4 bids per season. 2018-2019, they dropped off to just a single bid. I think, in my opinion, 2020, they were on track to be a multi-bid league again. So even though Cal State Fullerton had a really slow start to the year and was kind of one of the biggest stories, I think, from the West Coast, was that Cal State Fullerton was not kind of meeting the expectation that we expect from them. Despite that, though, they still had, the Big West still had several teams that I think were in contention to be in a regional. And I think that was UCSB, that was Long Beach State. And you even had some of that middle level of the Big West competing and winning games. Cal Poly beat Michigan a couple times. Cal State Northridge traveled out to Florida and played Florida International, I believe, took a few games. And it was those sort of things that the Big West needs in order to boost the conference RPI, in order to get multiple bids. Long Beach State was probably the most surprising team after they had a really abysmal start to their 2019 season. They lost 10 plus games in a row to start the season. In the 2020 season, they had weekend series wins against Mississippi State and Wake Forest, and really were looking like a team that was going to compete for the Big West, but going to compete potentially to host a regional in Eric Valenzuela's just first year there. So looking ahead to 2021, it's a little difficult to nail down how many bids the Big West will get. There's a few things at play here. I think the first one is we don't have any of the Big West schedules right now. So that's a big wild card, a big question mark in the Big West. Secondly, we know as of now, the Big West seems to be on track to allowing non-conference games, but probably schools within the conference will be opting out of non-conference games. And it looks like Long Beach State is on track not to play non-conference games in 2021. I believe that's because they didn't get on the field in the fall and they just haven't had a chance to practice as a team, get reps, understand the depth of the team. So what's
along with that, the teams that are like Pac-12 might not be allowing like non-conference and out there might not be allowing non-conference. So they'd have to travel pretty far to play non-conference games.
It could be. For sure, we have less non-conference from the Mountain West. As of right now, the Pac-12 has not made any official statements on non-conference will be allowed. But we do know that the Pac-12 has shown up on non-conference schedules. So, for instance, BYU is supposed to be a trip to Oregon State. Arizona is going to be playing in the Frisco Classic. Likewise, Arizona is hosting Illinois State. So there's been some non-conference games announced. And so far what I'm hearing is that the Pac-12 might actually be on track for a pretty normal looking schedule.
Okay, good.
Yeah, that would play into, I think the Big West needs to knock off USC or get some midweeks against UCLA, those sort of things in order to beef up that resume. But Kyle, help set it straight. What's the ceiling for the Big West? I know they've had four teams get in the years past. Is that ridiculous? Can they do that again? Or am I foolishly thinking that they're more than a one-bid league? Or are they just going to be an automatic qualifier league this year?
I think they could be two. The ceiling is probably three. And the wild card there is Fullerton. I know they did not have a good 2020, but if they can turn it around and win some of their early season non-conference games, at least in the eyes of the media, it would help everyone kind of who doesn't like is not like all in on every team in the Big West, in the Big West, just kind of understand that okay, there's another player in there, and it's not just the top two teams beating up on everybody else. It would kind of help just give a boost, and that could push Fullerton into the tournament, but it's looking more like two bid league, maybe one bid league with UCSB and Long Beach State.
Yeah, I really like Santa Barbara and Long Beach State. Long Beach State, I am a little worried that they hadn't had a chance to practice, but they are still coming back with a pretty good squad. I think Santa Barbara is the type of squad that very much could be in competition for hosting a regional. Exciting story from them out of the fall was Michael McGreevy, who was their Sunday starter last year, already had a sub-2 ERA, was a closer, I believe, previous year before them. But he did all that with just throwing high 80s or so, and They streamed their last game of their World Series that they did there, and he was hitting mid-90s and touched 96. And if that's the type of thing they're throwing, like, that's the arm they're throwing out there on Sunday, like, that's a pretty formidable pitching staff they have right there. So I think Santa Barbara, I don't want to say is a lock to make the tournament, but feels like a near lock. Long Beach State might be a little bit trickier, especially they don't have non-conference, but if they finish second in conference and some of the other teams get some non-conference games, some big wins, for instance, like you're saying with Santa Barbara, Fullerton, Northridge, Cal Poly, then the path forward becomes a little bit easier. But I think if I were to, all right, let's say over under on 2.5 teams, are you taking the over or the under right now?
I would take the under. Yeah, I would take the under.
I think I'm right there with you.
And that's partially because I just had to look it up to make sure the automatic bid for the Big West is determined based on the regular season, kind of like the Pac-12, and unlike a lot of the conferences in the rest of the country. So if UCSB is what we think is the best team in the conference, they'll show it throughout the whole season, unlike just like on a 4 or 5 game series, like at the end of the season.
That's a fair point. I think the Pac-12 has moved to now a conference tournament just recently. I don't think that's made yet, but I think that was happening last year. But that's a fair point, is that, you don't get any bid stealers like you might,
right,
or UCSB might be a lock. And if Cal Poly goes and wins the tournament, you know, they get in.
Knocks UCSB out or knock someone else out, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I think that's fair. So one thing that we did this last week that we hadn't done before is we posed a mailbag question out to our social media followers. And thanks to our followers, we got a lot of really good questions. People asking us who's our 8 for Omaha, which we're going to touch on, but probably as we get a little closer to the season. A lot of questions about Ole Miss. We have a lot of people who are really eager to know if Ole Miss missed their window with last season. And I think the short answer to that is no. I still think that in any given year, Ole Miss, in any given year, if you're a top 10 team in the country, I wouldn't say that you've missed a window. I think Ole Miss is a top 10 team and is very much in competition to get to Omaha. But
I think that person's point was more that last year was their best chance in a while to make a lot of noise in Omaha, and it was, but they bring a lot of those people back. So, this year could be the same thing. I think the window is still open, I think, is what we're trying to say.
Yeah, short answer to that one, I would say the window is still open. But the one that I want to spend a little bit more time on was submitted by Ryan Folks, who's a huge Razorback supporter. And he asked us about the SEC, a really fascinating question, and one that I think is impossible to answer. So let's try to answer it. So his question was basically, every year in the last 5 or 6 years, there's been one SEC team that starts off really hot and then just falls off the table. So a team that hits the ground running, especially in non-conference play, you're thinking maybe this is a top 10 team and then falls apart. So some examples, Mississippi State back in 2015, Kentucky in 2018. So he asked us, who do we think is going to be the team that starts strong and then loses steam as the season goes along? So what are your thoughts on that, Kyle?
I think there's a few candidates for this. We really liked how hot Alabama started last year. I think they started with one loss, and it was Tennessee. But they still, Alabama started pretty hot last year, regardless. And this year, it should be no different. They start with, I think, 18 games against teams against like lesser division or lesser teams that they could easily beat. They could easily go 17-1 in those first 18 games, but then they start the season, the conference play at Arkansas, and and hosting Southern Miss and hosting Ole Miss. That Southern Miss is a midweek. So they could lose all seven. They could win just two games, three games. That's a really tough way to start the year. And it's also a tough way to end the year too. So it's kind of playing towards the drop off. If they end against at Vanderbilt, at LSU, and then hosting Mississippi State, that is one of the toughest three weekends I've seen in a while. The only thing, way to make it worse would be going to Mississippi State. But yeah, the thing that we've seen with Bama lately, like the last few years, is they do really well in the non-conference because they don't go to a lot of these early season tournaments and they don't have that really tough competition. They do have Stetson this year, which is their best non-conference series. And Stetson will be a good test for them, like before they get into conference play. But everyone else in the SEC is kind of ready before they get to SEC play because they've played a lot of these tough Power Five games in like early season tournaments before they get to SEC play. So Alabama might need to look into getting into some of these tournaments like to help them get ready for SEC play.
I think something there with these tournaments is that they're inviting the top teams and Alabama kind of has to prove that they're a top team to get the Shriners or this college baseball showdown or things like that. So maybe that's a long-term plan for them, but I wouldn't sell Stetson too short. I mean, that's a team we have in our top 50, I think is Atlanta's Sun favorite. And I think that's a little bit of a ramp up into conference play. So I think that's the series there. Like that's a big harbinger, I think, for the rest of their season is, you know, at home in Tuscaloosa, they need to win 2 out of 3, I think, against Stetson or else, like you're saying, the next weekend they go to Arkansas and then they're hosting Ole Miss. I think another big thing for Alabama is Connor Prelip. If he's really as good as we think he is, and he could be the best starter in the SEC West, can he win on Friday night? So if you can go to Arkansas and win 1 out of 3, that's not a bad weekend. You know, if you can win on that Friday night, I think that could be enough to keep Alabama from kind of wiping off the face of the earth right away. But if it turns out that he can't quite go toe-to-toe on Friday nights, it's going to be, I think, really hard, especially on the road in the SEC, for Alabama to be winning series.
Yeah, if they only win Friday nights, they'll still go 10-20 in conference play.
Yeah, I mean, if you win, go 1-2 on the road, 2-1 at home, you finish at 500. I think that would be a successful year for Alabama. But
yeah, I agree.
They got to avoid sweeps, I think, if they're going to kind of rise above the expectations for them.
Definitely.
Agreed. I like your pick a lot. I'm going to go in a little bit of a different direction. I'm going to choose a top 25 team, which maybe is a bad move. So it's a team that we have ranked number 20 right now. Yeah, bold move here. So I don't think – so this is – first off, Ryan, this is a tough question because it's not just predicting who is going to be good and who's going to be bad. It's who's going to be good enough and whose schedule starts off easy enough that they're going to win a lot of games and then lose more games at the end of the year. So it's dependent on both the quality of the team and their schedules. So a little bit tricky. I'm going with Georgia as a team that I think can start off really hot, but might be kind of sputtering, running out of gas towards the end of the year. And it's for some of the same reasons that Kyle picked Alabama. The non-conference play that Georgia starts off with is not particularly strong. They get Evansville at home, Gardner-Webb at home, and North Florida at home. And then Lipscomb at home. So 4 series at home against teams that probably are going to finish outside the top 100, 150 in the RPI. Then their first SEC series is also at home against Tennessee. So I think that reasonably Georgia might only end up with a handful of losses. They could be the type of team that, you know, they're 18-3 or something like that. And you're sitting there looking at the rankings saying, like, we have to put them higher because there's teams with 5, 6, 7 losses. And how do we not rank Georgia higher? But I think the reality is their strength of schedule probably isn't going to be there yet. So they could be that number 10 team in the country, 18-3. but they have their own murderer's row to finish the season. So their end of the season is 3 games at Arkansas, 3 games at Florida, a game at Georgia Tech, and then hosting Ole Miss, which that's another series of 10 games right there, where it wouldn't be shocking if they only win a couple of those. And that's, I still think Jonathan Cannon and Georgia's offense should be competitive on Friday nights, but it's just, it's hard to see them winning more than a handful of games there. So they could go from a top 10, top 15 team to a team falling out of the rankings at the end of the year. I don't think they're going to totally fall out of regional contention, but I mean, same thing that we were talking about with the Big 12, where someone had to finish that 7th-8 spot in the Big 12. In the SEC, someone has to finish 10, 11, 12. On paper, I think right now we think that Kentucky and Missouri probably are 13, 14 in the SEC in some order. And that's not a knock against them. They're a pretty good team still. But who's going to finish 11th? Who's going to finish 12th? And I think in that 9, 10, 11, 12 range, Georgia's probably in there. And if they finish the season losing 8 out of their last 10 games and end up at 10th or 11th in the SEC, they could play their way out of a regional.
It's kind of dangerous. It's a really hard way to end the season.
Yeah, I wouldn't place bets on it. I think if I had to place a bet, I would say that they would be in, and that more likely we're going to get Alabama is going to be towards the bottom, maybe Texas A&M, maybe Auburn, just going up against the SEC West, just racking up too many losses. But I mean, none of these teams, we like all of these teams. I mean, it feels kind of wrong talking about these teams as, 10th or 11th best in the conference, maybe not making a regional. It's no knock against them, really. It's just the conference is too deep and someone's going to rack up losses. And if you're 12 and 18 in SEC play, you're probably not going to make a regional.
Right. Every team can't go 20 and 10. Like, hopefully, I mean, if you're some of those teams like A&M and Auburn and Georgia they were talking about, you hope that those top teams don't go 20 and 10. You want them to go more like close to 16 and 17 wins. That way wins are more evenly distributed and more teams are eligible for those wins. Like, you want kind of more balance, but it's looking like the top is just going to keep getting tougher. Like Florida and Vanderbilt are pretty top 5 in our rankings. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Someone's going to lose games in the SEC. And I mean, you can hope that the wins are distributed, but at the end of the day, you got to win those games. And I don't know how much it's going to get you against Kumar Rocker. All right. Well, I think that wraps up everything that we had to talk about on this week's episode. So I want to thank you all for listening to us. Kyle, thanks so much for being here like you are every week. We're getting close to the start of the season, just a few weeks out. Expect from us to see our freshman All-American coming soon and previews for the College Baseball Showdown, the Round Rock Classic, and more coming on our website, which is collegebaseball.info. You can follow us on social media at collegeballnat. We're on Instagram and Twitter. We're pretty active on both of those. If you tag us in something, we'll come by and like it, comment, things like that. We love hearing your thoughts on anything that we do on college baseball in general. You can find this podcast, obviously you're already listening to it, but in case you didn't know, you can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, we're finally there, we made it, and Google Podcasts. If you can, it does us a lot of good if you can subscribe, rate, give reviews to our podcast. That really boosts us in the mysterious Apple algorithms that allow us to get more listens to the podcast.
And our morale,
yes. We're primarily motivated by strangers' reviews of us, so we really would appreciate kind words on the internet. No, but in all seriousness, it really does help us grow the podcast and college baseball in general. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.